Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, and Spotify helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you find podcasts, you can find Kyle and myself for some reason. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan all year long, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all the live long day. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodidge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's never recanted an OU diss, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
It's 8:37 p.m., Gerald, and OU still sucks. Who would dare recant facts?
Depends on how you feel about J. Cole, but that's neither here nor there. We're here to talk about Texas doing what was once thought impossible, knocking off the number one Oklahoma Sooners softball team over the weekend with some heroic pitching on both sides of it. We've got a lot to talk about in down the 40 active season for us. BOL got a couple of commitments, got some players doing some things on the professional / semi-pro level. Obviously, then we'll close the show out with some Godzillatron and some Bang the Drum. But we start with the ladies of McCombs Field, who after a rocky start on Friday, got the back-to-back Saturday-Sunday wins to clinch the season win over, or the series win over the Oklahoma Sooners. The first series loss for the Sooners in 40 Big 12 games, and their first series loss since 2011, which is absolutely ridiculous, Kyle. Ridiculous things happened over the weekend, specifically at McCombs Field.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy that not all the rankings are out yet. Softball America's rankings are out, and they just did the easy thing of moving Duke up to number one. They have Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas is 2 through 4. It's fair. It's a weird week, right? Coming off an Oklahoma State series loss, Texas then, if you remember this has happened before with three-way ties and Texas, though they are a smidge behind OU for the season. But what an incredible, enormous, huge accomplishment for Coach White. If you don't follow college softball, like, Patty Gasso has built an absolute juggernaut, a behemoth, for the better part of a decade or plus. They just are unbeatable. Like, they maybe on a bad year lose two games, you know, they maybe never consecutively. Like, it's it's better than a decade since they've done that, you know, in the regular season. They're very, 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 very hard to beat multiple times. They pitch very well. They hit incredibly well. They play good defense. Like, they're so deep and talented that if one pitcher's struggling, they have another next woman up mentality. They have clutch hitters off the bench who they can bring in. Like, they're just loaded, and they, you know, since the transfer portal, the rich have only been getting richer. So to see a little bit of crack here in the OU roster construction enough that Texas could wiggle in and get this win is a big deal. This has been the target for both Oklahoma State and Texas, who are, again, two of the best programs in the country. But when you have this giant juggernaut just sitting at the top, it's like the 9-year-old kid on top of the monkey bars or the jungle gym. Kids are trying to climb up and they just swat them down. One, it's a lot easier when you already have the nice position you have at the top. It's easier to push people down. But two, they're just, you know, they're much more advanced. And they've been at this thing a lot longer than Texas in their kind of rebuild here after, glorious 20 years ago, being at this level. But OU really at the top. And so this is huge. This is an incredible, incredible performance, incredible win. McCombs was rocking. The pitching was you know, stellar, especially the second two games. The bats were timely. The defense came up with some big plays, again, especially the second two games. Just had everything you wanted. I've been following a lot of national softball folks who everyone knew. This was on big ESPN on a Saturday night, like under the lights. Everyone knew this was a huge game, especially when women's sports are part of the focus. This was many national softball writers called it, you know, one of the best softball series of all time. You know, incredibly great for the game of softball. But let's focus in on the point of this podcast. Incredibly great for the Texas Longhorns.
Huge for the Texas Longhorns. Friday, we'll gloss over Friday because that doesn't count, right? Because Texas won the series. OU won that one 5-2. Jada Coleman needs to freaking graduate. I'm tired of seeing her in crimson. Get the heck out of here. She's so, so good. And Kelly Maxwell was essentially bulletproof, unhittable for six innings. Texas scored some runs in the seventh, but couldn't dig out of that big hole. So Friday, things got weird on the internet. Things got shaky on the internet. OU fans got a little chippy on the internet because that one just felt like it usually does when anybody plays OU.
Yeah, they were very good in Texas. You know, they had some, they gave up some stuff early, and you know, they rallied late, and in fact they could have been more dangerous. They ripped a shot for the final out of the game that bounced off the third baseman's glove all the way to the shortstop because it was hit so hard. If that gets through, you got another run or two, the game gets real interesting all of a sudden, 5-4. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was the ending with Texas showing a little life that made OU fans feel a little bit nervous, like you know, the animals during the impending solar eclipse. I don't know. But, yeah, Friday is fine because it sets up Saturday, which was one of my favorite games of softball. There have been some good ones lately that I've ever seen.
Saturday and both Sunday turned out to be really, really good. Saturday, Texas came away with the win 2-1. Viviana Martinez had herself a game. Texas had that 2-1 lead, and the bases were loaded in the sixth. And then, let's just say it, video got involved, and Kyle and I got annoyed. We'll say it like that. There was a challenge from Patty Gasso that changed the trajectory because Texas was going to open it up. I'll go ahead and say it.
Yeah, it looked like, you know, it's rare that a team, if they beat OU, the formula the past few years, like their one loss a season, whether it was Texas a couple years ago or, you know, what looked like Louisiana this year, it's like a team just finds a way to irk by and gets a, you know, a 4-3 win or a 9-8 win, whatever it is. This looked like Texas was about to put the boots to them, up 2-1, bases loaded, an inch away from honestly a grand slam for Katie Stewart. But hits off the very top of the wall. Two runs score. Texas looks like they're getting momentum. Like, Texas hadn't had hits. Remember, Oklahoma State had shut them down in the week before, right? No home runs in that series. Almost got one there. You know, finally the bats get going. They had scored their runs on some doubles earlier where they, you know, were getting to some really good pitching, right? OU, Kelly Maxwell in game one, and then Nicole May in this one. Like, Nicole May, I think, is 44-1 over the past 2 years, right? So good pitching up top that Texas was finally starting to get to. That challenge took the wind out of their sails. You get one out for the runner who took her foot off the base, and then, you know, Stewart pops up to basically end that threat as well for probably Texas's most powerful bat, as we'll talk about a little with the Sunday game. But, you know, 2-1, well, I should say, and then Texas gets a walk, loads the bases up again, and can't, you know, even put another run through. So a terrible, with zero outs, bases loaded, to no runs get across. If you're an OU fan, you feel, oh my gosh, momentum. Texas in the seventh comes out and settles things down, get a diving catch for the first out, get a second out, with one runner on, you know, OU gets a big hit over the center fielder's head. And then just in that moment, if you're an OU softball fan or you're a fan of softball, you're saying, here comes OU. They're going to do it again. They're going to find a way to win because that's what they do. But that isn't what happened, Gerald. That isn't what happened.
So, yeah, it looked like OU was going to score the game winning, or I guess game tying to send it to extras or potentially game extending run. And one of the most dramatic putouts I think we've seen in Macomb's field history, at least recent history, Caden Henry chunks it in from center field. The shortstop gets the cutoff of Yonah Martinez, gets it home to Reese Atwood. Reese Atwood gets blown up at the plate. Atwood held on, and of course, Patty Gasso, right, much her right, but also feels a little petty that it was her second challenge, challenged it, and it was upheld. Texas gets the win in that one. This was Nicole May, just her second loss in 46 starts, which is absolutely ridiculous. Citlali Gutierrez got the win for Texas after a complete game. 7 innings, 6 hits, 2 strikeouts, no walks. Obviously gave up that one run. Then Sunday happened. Texas wins that one 2-1. OU takes a 1-0 lead in the first, or the top of the third, excuse me. And then Katie Stewart gave somebody a new window pane in that one to take the 2-1 lead.
The fact that they're building that in left field, that apartment complex, the ball just ricochets back into the field like with some force, which, you know, makes me think, yeah, Gerald, it just absolutely dented something in that apartment building. Just a moonshot. It, like, the way she hit it and then just dropped the bat and trotted felt very Ivan Melendez-y, very Titanic-y. It was just an absolute crushing of a softball. But that, you know, that was... that was the runs, right? And Bella Dayton did get a triple. That was the first triple OU's given up this season, just to talk about how good their pitching and defense combination has been. So Texas threatened, but they weren't getting more runs after that one big home run. So it really came down again to some great pitching. And you have to give Estelle Check credit. She came in and sealed this one off. And she came in a couple of these games in high-pressure situations. And you know, though she may it sometimes be the fourth pitcher on this staff, she really has been clutch for the Longhorns here down the stretch.
Yeah, so Texas moves to 31-6 on the year, third place in the Big 12. That loss to Houston is a difference from being one game back in second place. Texas still has some work to do. Next up, they got a midweek against Texas State on Wednesday. Then they go to Waco to take on Baylor, who is in our Texas in the middle of a 13 straight run of 13 straight against teams that are either ranked or right outside of the rankings. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. And we start with a championship moment over the weekend. Number 5 men's tennis knocks off those filthy dirt burglars 4-1 to win the Big 12 title on Saturday. Still have a week left and clinched it. Yeah, 4th title in the last 5 years of the Big 12 play. Texas continues to just amass Big 12 hardware on the way out. And doing it over OU obviously feels great.
Yeah, what a terrible Sunday for OU to lose the series for the first time since 2011 in softball, and then have Texas get to celebrate on your home court in tennis. Our guy Rick, who understands these things, said Big 12 is probably the toughest conference in tennis this year. So impressive for Texas to get the win. They did it the Oklahoma way. They went to the Sooner State. I don't think it's called the Sooner State. And I apologize to our Oklahoma State fans. But first, they go to Stillwater, easily handle number 33 Oklahoma State, swept all 6 of the single matches to win 6-1 to that one. And then, you know, in that OU one, they were relatively dominant in a 4-1 win there, where they got the doubles points, GAB, Cleve, and then fittingly, Micah Braswell gets the clinching point. He's been great this year. Both Elliot Spazieri and Cleve Harper win over 200 career combined singles and doubles wins this weekend, in addition to securing some additional hardware. Just really, really, really good stuff from the Longhorns men's tennis team that we, you know, at the beginning of the year, we're saying this is a national championship hopeful. And so you collect your trophies in order. You got to start with the Big 12, and then you go for the bigger one.
That was nice. That was good. So Texas, another team taking on Baylor this weekend. They've got Baylor over the weekend, and then they'll have the Big 12 championship next week. And on the ladies' side, number 8 women's tennis gets a pair of big wins during the week. Number 26, Texas Tech gets swept, and then a 6-1 win over BYU on the rare Saturday Big 12 tennis matchup, because BYU does not play on Sunday. So there is the 6th sweep of the conference season for the ladies, with that sweep of Texas Tech, and then absolutely just got their 10th conference win on senior day. What a way to do it.
Yeah, wins for all 4 seniors: Charlotte Shvatopone, Malika Rapolu, Tanya Sasnakaya, and Taisa Pascaleva, plus Vivian Ivruski for good measure. and the doubles gets you to the 6-1. They not only swept Tech but led every unfinished match. That could have been a good 7-0 sweep if they let it play out. But dominant, two, you know, very good teams, right? Again, two teams in the top of the receiving votes, number 26 and number 36. Tennis actually ranks beyond the top 25. But if you have your classical top 25 view, two ranked teams that are very strong, and Texas kind of just discarded them, right? And this really is a conference where Oklahoma State is unreal how good they are. The season didn't expect it, and they've been great. Texas, you know, has probably exceeded expectations as well. So we're really come down to those two teams as it has multiple times, right? In the indoor national championships, it was a great match earlier in the season. That they're two of the best teams in the country, and this if Texas wants to add one more piece of hardware before exiting the Big 12, they know who they need to root against.
So they got the regular season concluding this week. They've got road matches against TCU and Baylor on Friday and Sunday, respectively. So Texas has a shot, outside shot, at winning it, but they'll need to get some help. Number 18, men's golf, earns a runner-up finish at the Augusta Haskins Award Invitational. Christian Moss was the top Longhorn, finishing ninth. The 15-team field featured five in the top 25, including number one UNC, who shockingly won that tournament. On the ladies' side, they are currently sitting in fourth after the opening round of Napa's Silverado Showdown with 13 ranked teams, including four that are in the top 11. Keeping it country club, keeping it varsity blues. Number four, rowing wins three at the San Diego Crew Classic to open the season. Won the first eight, the first four, and the second eight at the USA's premier spring regatta. They fell in the open eight just behind Cal, so strong outing, but not a sweep as we're used to seeing. So up next, they're going to go to number nine, Michigan, at Belleville Lake on Saturday the 13th, this coming up weekend. Kyle, a lot happened on the track. Number 4/7, women and men respectively, win eight at the Cameron Burrell Alumni Invitation at UH. Multiple other top category, top collegiate showings in this one as well. But Kyle, run them down for us.
Yeah, Jeremiah Newby wins both the hammer and discus, the number two hammer throw in school history. Nina Nubwisi, who you know I love, her name, had the top throw in discus, which got her to the number three all-time in UT history. Women had the top three shot put throws, Nina again with the number two throw in the shot put in school history, as well as Marilyn Nomura and Crystal Herpin finishing out the top three there. Patrick Papiri didn't win, but had the top collegiate throw in shot put. Love a Papiri throwing heavy things. Cooper Tyler later won the men's javelin. Dylan Leinberger won the men's high jump. Kaylee Thompson and Sophia Kowalski went 1 and 2 in the women's pole vault. Elijah Mosley won the 400 because they did actually run things. It wasn't just field. There was also track. And then Zaya Holman ran the fastest 800 at the collegiate level. So U of H had a really good showing themselves for their home track tournament here. Texas, you know, will have a chance to really shore up something after the home Texas relays. Some folks took off this week, but you know, they are in good spot both on the men's and women's side, especially with their strong field showings.
Strong field showings indeed. Keeping it outdoor, beach volleyball goes 1-3 at the TCU Invitational Friday. They had a 3-2 loss to both Houston and Hawaii. Saturday, a win over Houston Christian and a 3-2 loss to number five TCU. That moves them to 6-8 on the year with just one match against Texas A&M Corpus Christi at noon, which you can get into for free over the weekend on Saturday if you can get yourself out to Austin. Then quickly, let's gloss over this baseball score, because why do we care about it? They dropped their first Big 12 series to BYU. 7-5 loss on Thursday. LBJ continues to struggle in openings. Gave up four earned runs on six hits in just three innings. Texas won on Friday, but then lost to a predictable score, 7-5 on Saturday.
Yeah, good news. Jalen Flores, now your Big 12 home run leader, continues to swing the bat well. Will Gasparino, you know, looks pretty good. We got the win when Ace Whitehead pitches. He's 3-0 now. He went 5.1 innings with five hits, three earned runs, six Ks. He looked good. Saturday, or, you know, Saturday, which again, this is BYU, so this would be the Sunday. So maybe we'll blame them for the, for this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, would have been Sunday. Max Grubbs picked up his first loss, gave up five earned runs in 2 1/3 innings. So the magic of Magic Max rubbed off just a little bit, as he kind of came out of nowhere to secure that Sunday spot. But, you know, again, you have guys who throw strikes. If guys get their bats on it, you know, BYU had some home run luck. It's tough. I think the more alarming thing is not winning on Fridays, or in this case, your Thursday, your first game of the series. Texas really needs to figure that out with you know, Tanner Witt being shut down and LeBaron Johnson right now not looking like the dominant Friday guy. It just looks a lot different than we expected coming into the season, which you could kind of say last year as well, which happened. So, you know, I'm not saying the job has been easy for Pierce, but it certainly just hasn't been productive in the way fans or national pundits or anyone thought. They lost some players before the year. They knew there was tempered expectations of, is this a top 10 team? But I think everyone agreed this looked like a top 25 team. But they did, you know, the inability to get consistent with the arms is a little bit alarming, right? Losing to BYU is not great. There was a point, you know, this weekend, I think even on, after they won on game two, heading into Saturday, there was a point of like, you know, if OU loses and Texas wins, they could jump up to the top of the Big 12, which is crazy. They could sit alone at the top. OU won and Texas lost, so that is certainly not the case, and it feels a whole lot different, right? The way they'd kind of been eking out, lose Fridays, win the series, made you feel a little bit better, but there's definitely some problems there. Definitely some problems that have to be addressed if, you know, there's anything to salvage from this season, which just, you know, has not gone the way that I think anyone associated with this program would have hoped.
Definitely not how we wanted it to go, and hopefully Texas has an opportunity to clean that up. Got a stretch of 9 games in 13 days, so it'll be tough. It's tough sledding for them, but they've got a Tuesday, Wednesday home series against Texas State. Split those. It's like a home-and-home situation, which is fun. And then they've got U of H over the weekend, which is going to be in...
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Texas getting commitment after their big recruiting weekend with a lot of folks on campus. A guy who I imagine has been just good enough to keep this ranking, doesn't want to go any higher, to be top 247's number 247, Ricky Stewart, running back from Chapel Hill, a city known for unbelievably good sausage. if you have a Chapel Hill kolache, oh my goodness, it is tremendous. But we're not talking about my Saturday morning eats here. We're talking about an elite running back, Gerald. And there seems to be a strategy kind of forming with the way that Choice and Sark put together these classes when they, you know, go after multiple running backs. And so while Ricky Stewart is a really good commit, and I'm not trying to downplay anything about him at all, it does feel like maybe he's kind of the one they get in the boat as they go fish a little bit. At least they know they'll eat, but they fish for a little bit bigger fish in the deeper end of the pond.
It's going to become a numbers issue at some point for this running back room. So I think this is the kind of guy. Ricky Stewart, he's got like it fat. I don't even know what it is, but like you look at his tape and it doesn't like overwhelm you, but he just makes plays, right? I'm an armchair like analyst, right? I feel like there are things that Coach Choice is going to have to coach him up on, but the dude makes plays, right? And that's all that matters. And they need those kinds of guys, right? Like you can't get the 5-star all world guy every year. I mean, Choice obviously would love to do that, and they've done that multiple years in a row. But you know, he is a guy who can play multiple positions. He played some wildcat quarterback in high school as well. Just one of those dudes that like at a school like Chapel Hill, you got to just find your best athlete and let him be an athlete and win you some ball games. And so he's probably got a little bit of a development curve on him, and I think that's fine, right? Because Texas has a lot of dudes in that stable, so I'm excited to see what he turns into. He's thick, 5'10", 180. Looks like he could probably support some more weight, and will probably catch at least another inch or so as he gets to college. So I'm excited to see how he develops, because I think there's a lot of development left on him. He's not going to be one of those guys that comes to college and is already a finished product or is pretty close to the ceiling. I think there's a lot of rough on this diamond.
An incredibly productive high school kid, right? Is a junior, he was the focal point and really the entire offense of a Chapel Hill team that made the state championship game. 2855, almost 3,000 rushing yards, 40 touchdowns. Sometimes you worry a little bit with those guys having a lot of carries, you know, but again, he looks like a stinking Adrian Peterson at Palestine, the way he's so much better than every person he's playing with. I'll take it. But no, I mean, it's definitely a kid you want in. I don't think he even took a lot of visits. It's nice to get that guy in, get him locked in. You know he's going to have a productive career, so get him in early and again, figure out what the rest of the class shakes out. But the other big commit that everyone in the streets are talking about, 2024 kicker Spencer Barnett, commits to Texas as a preferred walk-on. The Austin Westlake product decommitted from Colorado State. Multiple 50-yarders in high school. I believe I saw he had a 59, 58-yarder in high school. Just a great player who probably can do both all of the special teams, place kicking, field goal kicking, as well as obviously punting.
I mean, I have mixed feelings about not having a scholarship punter kicker because, you know, you probably – at Texas's ability, want you know, somebody who's an elite guy. But I mean, if he's hitting 59 yarders in high school, then he's probably an elite guy and will likely work himself into a scholarship. But that's neither here nor there. Also, can do some punting, kind of a multi-purpose guy for Coach Jeff Banks.
Yeah, you have the local scout on him right there for Banks, and I usually trust Banks's takes, right? A guy who can unearth a Danny Trejo and find productivity out of him. I think there's good depth at the punting maybe immediately, and long-term we'll see. There's some other kickers on the 40, so he doesn't need to immediately contribute there, but may come in and immediately punt, depending what happens. But yeah, good take as a PWO. Always like guys who have scholarship offers and decide to stay home at the University of Texas. A guy who did plenty at the University of Texas and got rewarded at the start of a career. I think a entree that he will likely want to forget, but at least sets him up for a career at the next level. Blair Henley, a guy who we loved watching pitch on the 40 acres as we lament Texas consistency in arms and the current team. Guys like Blair Henley are the reason that we have such high expectations, right? Great, consistent, just get him out pitcher at the college level, has finally got a call up for his debut tonight as we're recording this against the Texas Rangers. I will discuss nothing about the details of how it went, and I think none of us should at all.
Nope, moving on. Got nothing.
Moving on. Kate Nifton and Daisy Matsuo Manson will compete for Team USA at the 2024 Paris Olympics, announced last week. We knew they were in the camp. They were, I think, 13 finalists named for the 4 and the 8 boats that will be racing for the red, white, and blue.
I'm excited to do our how many Olympians does Texas have versus some small countries counting again. And absolutely. So we're at least at 2 right here.
That's right. These are the second and third Longhorns to represent USA rowing at the Olympics. Farrah O'Keefe and Lauren Kim represented the Longhorns with strong showings. The Augusta women's amateur both made the cut. And then, you know, if you make the cut, you get to play your final rounds at the actual Augusta National at the hardest course, and both showed really, really well. You know, professionals struggle and get made a fool out of that course. So again, for two amateurs to go in and compete and make the cut and then finish in the top end, really solid. Proud of both of them.
Yeah, I mean, tied for 14th for O'Keefe, 20th for Kim. Like, there are professionals, obviously, that they were ahead of, which is pretty impressive. So, good, or not professionals, but they put in better performances than some professionals have. Let me say it like that, because obviously this was the amateur, right? But, like, there are professionals that have golfed worst at Augusta National. So we'll put it like that.
Don't know how to segue this one. It just feels like every week we have to talk about the awards that our guy is winning. Leo, the German, named the USTFCCC a national athlete as well as the Big 12 performer of the week for his performance at the Texas Relays. Last week we broke down the stats. Since then, we break down the awards. Our guy Leo, talented.
The Nuge. Keep it going, big guy. Or not so big guy.
Women's basketball's Maddie Booker getting some awards herself, namely Cheryl Miller, Small Forward of the Year. She's the first freshman to ever win the award, also named to the WBCA All-American team. Well deserved.
Cheryl Miller canonically better than her brother, Reggie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all would say this, and I believe even Reggie at some point.
Reggie has said that. That's why it's canonical. Reggie has said it.
Yeah, that's correct. That is what that word means. I should, what was I, an English and journalism major or something? Anyways, moving on, last bit of news here and keeping it women's basketball. Khadijah Faye, who we knew was leaving the University of Texas, she walked at senior night. Officially announced today on Instagram that she is entering the transfer portal with 1 year of eligibility left. So we'll be keeping an eye where Big K-Fay winds up. She's going to go probably start for some team as opposed. She's a big presence. Texas just is loaded with talent down low with everyone else coming back and some talented freshmen coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you hate to see her go. She was a stalwart, I think, especially a locker room presence and a bench presence. But again, you and I will never begrudge a player for going to finish their career where they want to and in the way that they want to. So big ups to her. Thank you for your contributions. She graduated. She got her degree. So like big ups to her for getting that T ring and being, you know, an upstanding member of the university. And I hope wherever she lands, she is happy and finds what she needs in this last year of eligibility and finishes her basketball career off on her own terms.
Love that. Gerald, it's that time. What have you been watching on your giant screen? Let's take us through a bit of Godzillatron.
Yeah, so after a couple of slow watching weeks, it was a big watching week for us. We were watching some random stuff for family night, movie night on Fridays, but this week we got to watch Disney's Wish. And I have really mixed feelings about it. I liked the story that they were trying to tell. I feel like the execution wasn't great in some spots. I think it was a little bit too self-referential. It was a very Disney-focused Disney movie. But some of the songs, absolute bangers. Like I was in the other room, like with one of the kids, and I heard a song. Well, I was in the other room getting my kid another slice of pizza and heard the song come on. I was like, everybody shut up. Let's listen to this one. It sounds really good. Really good. My wife and I also got to go out and go see Monkey Man at the theater over the weekend for a little date night. There is a... So I went into Monkey Man with wrong expectations. It's been advertised and kind of hyped as like an action movie, and it has a lot of action. It's very action heavy, but it's not like John Wick or The Raid. It's an action movie like First Blood. And I put this out there on Twitter as well, where it's way more character focused. It's way more dealing with this guy's trauma, right? If you go back and watch the original First Blood, it's not like the other Rambo movies where First Blood is a political movie about how we treat veterans. The treat of the veterans coming back from Vietnam, which is actually still prescient to this day, how we treat veterans. We, you know, have decided that it's cheaper to worship veterans than it is to actually give them what they need to survive. And so it's still a very prescient movie, but you know, he goes into the small town and he gets, you know, messed with by police and kind of PTSD hits him and he goes into Vietnam War mode. And that's not really the plot of Monkey Man, but in a similar way where it has some social things to say about what's going on socially in India and kind of how people are treated and capitalism in India is really hurting the indigenous folks. That's really a lot of what this movie is about, is people in India having to scrap and scrape to survive. And so the action sequences are there. It's a revenge movie. The last action sequence, like the last probably 20-ish minutes of the movie, is just an action sequence that starts in a kitchen and goes all the way up a high rise. It's really, really good. Dev Patel, again, his directorial debut, you could tell he was excited. I think there were some things that he probably, a more seasoned director, would have done differently, but like overall, this is me nitpicking. Like I gave it like an 8.5. Like I really enjoyed it. I thought Dev Patel was good. I thought the action was good. I thought the cinematography was fun. It was a good movie. Very visually interesting stuff. So yeah, I would recommend it. Again, don't go in expecting John Wick. Go in expecting First Blood, and I think you'll have a way better time. And honestly, shout out to my wife for helping me realize that, because I came out of the movie a little conflicted, and we were talking about it, and she was like, "Here's how I felt about it," and I was like, "Oh yeah, I agree. That's right. That's how I should feel about it too." So that was good. And then watch WrestleMania over the weekend on Saturday night and Sunday night. It was fun. Nostalgia. I had friends of the show who don't listen to the show, Mario and Ray, over to watch on Sunday night, and like it was dumb fun. Like the Undertaker and the Rock showed up. Well, you know, we knew the Rock was going to be there, but the Undertaker and John Cena showed up unexpectedly. Like just super dumb fun stuff. Like it is drama. It is soap opera in singlets is what it is, and it delivered on what I wanted.
That's interesting. I can't remember the last time I've watched WrestleMania. It's been a few years, but not as many years. I think I was in a bar once in New Orleans and WrestleMania was on. Anyways, unimportant. glad you got to watch that. And some of y'all's text updating were great. So I felt like I was watching it live myself. What I did watch at the same time you were watching that, I think, Saturday night, was Saturday Night Live. I don't remember the last time I actually watched Saturday Night Live, but I watched the Women's National Championship, which was amazing. Caitlin Clark versus South Carolina, kind of just throwing talented players 7, 8, 9 deep at her, and you know, for much of the game, she rose to the challenge, and eventually Dawn Staley and a really, really, really good coaching job and really good performance from South Carolina won out. But anyways, afterwards, watched Saturday Night Live, which I hadn't in so long. It happened to be Kristen Wiig, and it happened to be her like fifth time hosting. So much like you were talking about WrestleMania, it was a big a non-exhaustive list of guest stars would include John Hamm, Martin Short, Paul Rudd, Ryan Gosling, say Matt Damon made a cameo. It was great. Obviously, Kristen Wiig was the star, and there were some great funny show bits. The Jumanji bit may have been my favorite, which was right off the top. But yeah, just a great chance. It's probably been, I don't know, a couple of years since I watched an SNL live. I think maybe when Adele was on. It's been a long time, legitimately. I always watch clips, but I don't always catch it live or all the way through. But anyways, watch that. And then the other thing, Gerald, I've started, and I don't know, are you watching or not?
We're current.
Okay, the new Top Chef Wisconsin. I think we're two episodes in at this point. We may have... Yeah, I think two. I don't think we got through three, but I'm excited to talk a little bit more once we get it, because it started off, even the first episode, I was like, I don't know if I like this cast. Who's my favorite in here? And even by the end, maybe we did start three, because even in the middle of the third episode, I'm already feeling like, okay, I like this person. Don't like this person at all. So it's you know, like the formula works. I have my opinions. Top Chef, just perfect comfort watch material.
I hate this person on the show, got sent home the first week, so
yes, it
worked out really well for me and my wife, because we both like, I don't
terrible.
Like this person.
He was terrible.
He was awful. So yeah, and I hope they don't, I mean, he doesn't listen to this because, you know, he's that yuppie that makes upcycled food, whatever. But it's either here nor there. That brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this?
So, I'm not going to bang the drum on the fact that Travis Scott was on campus, and it was like when the president visited when I was there. No. The kids love him, some Travis Scott, and that's great. I love that he loves UT. He came by, but it was not the biggest event on campus this week. It may not have even been the second biggest event on campus this week. And I'm not talking about any of the sports, though this is a sports podcast. But specifically, there were two like really wild things that happened on UT Austin campus in like a 24-hour span. And, you know, it's one of those times I obviously, like most of you listening to this, if you had a four-year college experience, especially if you did that at UT, you yearn for those days with incredible nostalgia. I know I do. I speak for Gerald here when I assume he does. It was just, it's a fun time, that being in college time in your life. There's nothing better. But I don't often find myself being jealous of like, man, these kids have it this way, except the fact that they have Uber and across from the house I lived in is now a little food truck park. But besides those things, I don't often be like, man, I wish my experience was now instead of when I did it, because I just loved my college experience. However, this weekend, the University of Texas hosted the CMT Awards, which, you know, I don't watch a lot of CMT Awards. I don't listen to a ton of country music anymore, except Beyonce's Cowboy Carter album. But no, it just general kind of mainstream country. Like, you know, I will watch every second of Sturgill Simpson's performance outside the CMA Awards. You know, I do like music of roots, soul, country, you know. Anyways, I digress. But the CMT Awards were on UT's campus, both in the Moody Center and played out in the on the West Mall. It looks really awesome. Like, just legitimately looks so cool. And what a cool thing as a college student to be able to see the free concert, to see all the equipment. If Gerald and I both worked in student television, to be able to see the professional production equipment of a show like that. Roger Clemens was called up on stage for a Toby Keith in memoriam kind of shout out. So suck it, Sooners. It was very cool that happened. And then immediately, within 24 hours, Gail King, really within a few hours, that morning, Gail King is on there with CBS This Morning hosting coverage of the eclipse on the 40 acres, and they really did it up. I mean, it looked incredible. Austin being in the path of totality, again, one of the biggest colleges in the country, being in the path of totality, just such a cool thing. And they really seem to do it right, the event. Like, I've just been watching videos that kids, the university, the different sports programs, whoever's Instagram you follow around UT, they've just been great videos. They had like 14 different spots around campus where they had little events. The main one, obviously, in the main mall was packed. They had the band, they had glasses on Hook'em, which was hilarious. They had cameos and performances, and they also just captured some really, really cool videos of Austin going dark, the tower being lit, and then it coming light again, like in a short span. Like, the true, like, wow of this event. I think, you know, hundreds of years since Austin had been in the path of totality, and hundreds of years to come. So such a cool thing. And I'm so glad the university did it up big. There's, you know, famous alumni are, you know, we have the McDonald Observatory, which, you know, is affected in this. And so some of the brightest minds, we have the guy who hosts, what's the show on PBS that's like, it's Cool to Be Smart. Anyways, can't remember. But he was like hosting a thing. It's like all these, like, you remember these intellectuals who are some of the leading scholars on the stuff that's happening with our celestial happenings, but also have a UT presence. I don't know. It was just a really cool synergy of all these things and these events. And man, I was just thinking, how cool must it be to be a student at that moment, being on campus because you belong there, versus the folks who drove in from all around the state to be in Austin, Round Rock, whatever the hill country, to do it. Just really, really cool. I was admittedly jealous of all you young folks who got to experience that. I had some great memories at UT, but I don't know if any of them really came close to that.
Yeah, that is a top. It takes a lot for me to get jealous of what's going on campus, because our time was pretty incredible. But that's pretty cool. I'm banging drum this week. One, I'm not going to talk about the ratings for the women's NCAA tournament and the championship game, because I've done that for multiple weeks now. And so I don't want to sound like a broken record or a hollow drum. But again, look up the numbers. They were incredible. It's like, if you advertise it and you put it out there and create meaningful coverage of it, people will watch women's sports. But I'm actually banging the drum this week on a potential NCAA eligibility rules change. So it just happened today. The NCAA committees are going to be meeting about a potential rule change that will allow unlimited transfers for players. As long as they meet the correct academic eligibility standards, they can transfer whenever the heck they please. And in a world where John Calipari literally just left one of the best jobs in college basketball for a good but not as great job in college basketball because he was worried he was going to get fired, good on him. Good on everybody in this, right? We chose to do a capitalism in college athletics. And so let's do a capitalism in college athletics, full send, right? I am not going to be your capitalist apologist, but if we're going to do this, we might as well do it fully. And so giving these student athletes the opportunity to say, as long as you are taking care of your business in the classroom, you can do what you need. And now I do think there are some players that probably need some grown adults to help them process through their decisions. And I hope these don't become emotional decisions for players. But again, as somebody who made a lot of dumb decisions in college and turned out okay because of it, I think there's an opportunity for these players to do the same, right? Some part of college is doing something stupid and realizing, oh, that was stupid. Let me not do anything that stupid again. And so again, there's going to be issues with it. There will continue to be issues with it. But as long as we live in a society and in a world that coaches can leave at the drop of a hat, players should have the same luxury to take care of their careers in the same way that coaches do. Because again, you only get to hang them up one time, right? You only get one football career. You only get one basketball, baseball career. And everybody that has ever played a sport has that moment where they think, man, I wish it had gone differently here. Or man, I wish I could change this one thing. And so giving players an opportunity to take a little bit more of a control of that in a world where this is a $1 billion industry, totally fine with it.
Gerald Goodrich, father, son, podcast host, Capitalismo defender of the NCAA. I agree with it. It's cool. Like, things were going to happen. Things were going to come. I love that. We're seeing it. We're living it. We'll adjust. We'll figure out what works. These are wild times. These are fun times. So be a fan of college athletics.
That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carp. You can also follow the Texas Pre-Gamer at Texas Pre-Gamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with some more coverage of all of this fun stuff. But until then,
look up. It's 9:23. I know you still sucks.